Shalom. Good morning. This is Radio Shalom coming to you through Planet FM 104.6. Shalom, Lenny.
Shalom, John.
Well, we're delighted to invite back our own Lenny Bloxburg, and he is going to hold forth in his usual forthright manner. And we're looking at a new subject today.
Right. Well, today I wanted to start with something which I thought you, as a mother, would quite like. So, when you study philosophy, the first couple of years studying philosophy is really all about memorizing who said what when.
Exactly.
And there's really not a lot of philosophy to it. When you get to your graduate and postgraduate studies, you get into some more interesting things. And one of the really interesting things that came out of one of the more advanced postgraduate classes in philosophy that I took when I was doing my PhD was this very interesting observation, really, about the great philosophers of history. All the great philosophers of history touched upon some key issues that were very important in life that really mattered to people, and they got
through
it wrong.
Through the ages.
Right, throughout the ages. They all touched on something important, but they all got it wrong. Actually, your mother had it right. So the idea being, what they've observed is that when your mother tells you something and she gets it right and it's really simple philosophy, you listen to it and say, yeah, that's right. And you don't spend a lot of time debating it or talking about it. It's just, yeah, that's the way it is. When Nietzsche or Aristotle says something and he's really hit on something important and he's close to the mark, but it's not quite right, people spend centuries, millennia debating it. And that's how you get to be famous as a philosopher. So if you really want to get famous as a philosopher, get it wrong.
So that other people can debate it.
So that people will spend a lot of time debating what you said. If people spend a lot of time debating what you said, then you'll become famous as a philosopher. However, the truly great philosophy, the really important stuff, is actually the stuff that's stated so simply that there just isn't a lot of debate. Kind of like what your mother said.
Like, don't fight with your brother.
Right. So I've been looking at trying to reduce a lot of problems to the kind of philosophy that is so simple and so true that people stop debating it and they just look at it and say, yeah. And if people would pay attention to that kind of simple mum's logic, mum's philosophy sort of level of stuff, which actually is according to this course and I took in philosophy is possibly a higher level of philosophy than what you learned in school, what Aristotle and Nietzsche talked about. Your mother's probably more important, but
still it has to be debated.
Sometimes, but sometimes some of the things that your mother told you are just, yeah, that makes sense, and you just go on and live with it. So I've been looking at one of the things that really bothers me in the world is how much time people spend hurting each other, physically, emotionally, berating each other, putting each other down. And
that's politics.
No, it's not just politics. It's life in general. And there's something quite interesting about this where I started looking at trying to understand it and trying to put it into a simple perspective that would be the kind of level of philosophy that would just make sense and actually start moving towards solving the problems. And I came up with something very, very simple. In fact, it's so simple that people actually stop and listen in the middle of a fight. And basically it's helping people good, hurting people bad.
I thought that's what the religions were teaching anyway.
No. So most religions have enough complexity in their books. The Torah has it, the Quran has it, the New Testament of the Bible has it, the Hindu books have it. Everything has these passages that can be construed as when it's okay to try to hurt someone. When do you stone someone? When do you do things against someone? When do you actually have a... When does it appear that you have an instruction to hurt someone?
Legitimately.
And most... So if you know Torah and you know that these passages are in there, But if you know Talmud, you know that you're never supposed to actually use them. There are messages that we're supposed to understand about the things that God does and doesn't want that are being taught with the expression of stoning the person, but we're not supposed to actually stone anyone, okay? So in Judaism, there is not a legitimate reason to choose to hurt people. In fact, in modern...
Not even in self-defense.
No. So the interesting thing in self-defense, which is there are two great cases in self-defense which illustrate the situation. Self-defense defines a situation in our modern law where it is acceptable to use force to protect people. The key thing about self-defense is that you must be protecting life and limb, protecting people. So there was a famous case in the U.S. where a woman was being beaten by her husband. She'd been to the hospital at least three times because she had been beaten so badly. And she was trying to reach out and get help, and it was well known that she was being beaten very badly, okay? So one day her partner came home drunk and beat the crap out of her. And then he fell asleep on the floor. And she knew from experience that if he beat her up when he was drunk, he would beat her up twice as hard when he woke up with a hangover and grumpy. And so she killed him while he slept. And she pleaded self-defense in court. Well, the courts decided no. If she had used force while he was beating her, that was self-defense. But once he fell asleep, she could no longer argue that the use of force was necessary to protect life and limb. Self-defense law only requires that you're only allowed to use force to protect people. And it acknowledges that sometimes force, which may involve hurting a person, may be required to protect a person. But it doesn't give you a right to hurt. It gives you a right to protect and a right to use force in the act of protection. So the second case that came up was a man was randomly mugged by some guy in some city in the U.S., totally random, no relationship between the people. The guy jumped him and was gonna rob him. And he swung around and hit the guy. It started beating him up, first of all. And he swung around and hit the guy and defended himself and knocked the guy out. Once he knocked the guy out, with his adrenaline flowing, he continued beating and kicking the person, and the person died. So he pleaded self-defense. The courts found that up until the point where the attacker had passed out, it was indeed self-defense. At that point, it changed from self-defense to manslaughter, essentially in this case, because it was in the heat of the moment sort of situation. So it wasn't murder; it was considered manslaughter. But once the attacker had passed out, the use of force was no longer justifiable for the protection of life and limb.
But the man might have thought that he wasn't passed out, that he would revive quickly and then he would be at risk again.
That's a judgment call, and the courts made the decision that once he was passed out and was no longer able to pursue, the victim could have walked away, could have gotten help. Mm-hmm. Okay? So this is very important to understand about what is self-defense. And when do you have a right to hurt? The reality is you never have a right to hurt people. You have a right to protect people. And there's an acknowledgement in the law that that sometimes may require using force, which may result in someone being hurt, in order to protect people. Okay? So this is really kind of important. And today we have a lot of identity politics where basically people say, my side is good, your side is bad. And instead of talking about the issues, they talk about reasons they can attack and hurt the other side. Okay? None of that is helping. None of that is part of the solution because you actually don't have a right or justification to hurt anyone, whether it's with words or with actions. And if you look at something like... take the classic debate about Middle Eastern politics. And what happens if you apply helping people good, hurting people bad. So I've spoken with actually two members of Knesset. I've spoken to them about this, and both of them told me it's not that simple. And I said, actually, yes, it is. One of them, a couple of months later, published an article in the Jerusalem Post saying, actually, yes, it is that simple. So when there's a lot of complexity in the Arab-Israeli conflict, and we can get into all the different difficulties there that make it hard to adhere to helping people good, hurting people bad. But if you are using those reasons to as a justification for why you have a right to hurt the other side, you're wrong.
It depends, I think, too, if you think the other side will have the same message as you do, hurting bad.
No, it doesn't.
But if it's you don't hurt, but the other side hurts you, then taking it because you don't hurt, they have the right to hurt you.
No. Remember, self-defense exists. So, again, we take the self-defense laws example, and we use it in the laws of international laws of warfare. In the international laws of warfare, if you take your army and you go into another territory to kill as many people as possible on an offensive measure, that's considered a war crime. If you go into another territory to take resources, land, oil, gold mines, whatever, that's considered a war crime. If someone invades your country and you defend and defeat them, okay, you're still using force. You're still hurting them. But international law recognizes that if someone invades your territory, invades your and starts firing missiles at your people, you have a legitimate right it's considered a legitimate use of warfare to defend your people and your territory against an offensive incursion. Okay? Again, the same rules as self-defense. As long as you are defending life, protecting life and limb, then it's considered a legitimate use of warfare.
Well, now, who does the considering?
This is what is supposed to be heard by the world courts. And that can all be debated, and we can all talk about get into a very long discussion about how world courts view these kinds of matters. But the principle in the law that they're supposed to be applying is that international laws of warfare allow that you are allowed to defend. You're allowed to use military force to defend life and limb, to defend people, to protect people. You are never allowed to use military force to intentionally try and hurt people. And this is the principle of law which exists in international laws of warfare. So you don't have a right to hurt. So if you go into a situation like the Arab-Israeli conflict and you say, right, there is never a justifiable reason to go out and hurt Palestinians. There is never a justifiable reason to go out and hurt Israelis. Okay, now what do we do? Well, actually, you sit down and talk about what the issues are. And in fact, there's a lot of complicated issues to deal with. But if you're sitting down talking about the issues, there's a possibility that someone might find a solution. As long as you're shouting at each other about, as long as you're demanding that you have a right to hurt the other side, and you're not talking about the issues, then there's no possibility to see peace. Hmm. So, does that make sense?
It makes sense. It doesn't seem reality, but it makes sense.
Well, why does it not seem reality? So what would happen if the UN passed a resolution that in any international conflict, the two sides, each side had to agree that the other side will exist in some form, not to be named, before they're allowed to have a voice in the negotiations for a peace settlement? Okay? So both sides have to agree that the side that they're fighting against will have a right to, those people have a right to exist. Okay? And then we can sit down and have then the UN is now in a position that they can negotiate what are the terms of that existence, of the coexistence.
That is if the UN were above, that they had earned the right. But at the moment, it's too political.
So we could get into issues
maybe
about
maybe World Court would be.
We can get into issues about what would happen if about the problems that are going on in the UN. What I'm proposing is that the UN does take a role in various negotiations. The UN provides aid to various sides in various political conflicts. Okay, so you simply pass a UN resolution that the UN-mediated negotiations are only allowed to occur where both parties agree that the other side will exist at the end of the negotiation. And UN aid is only allowed to be given to parties that agree that the other side is allowed to exist at the end of any peace settlement. Okay? So if you look at the Arab-Israeli conflict again, the Israelis have to agree that the people, the Arabs who call themselves Palestinians, will exist in some form at the end of the negotiation. And then they have to negotiate what those terms are. Similarly, the Palestinians would have to agree that Israel and Jewish people will exist at the end of the negotiation. It seems a pretty really rudimentary place to start. We're not saying that, you could say that they could argue, and once they get into the negotiations, they could argue that these people will exist as slaves, as our slaves, and that's how they will continue to exist. Well, that's part of the negotiations, is whether you want them to exist as your slaves or you want them to exist as free people. But you have to start by agreeing that they will exist, and then you can negotiate the terms. It's a really, really a simple place to start the negotiations, and if you apply that, it becomes quite interesting. So again, taking the Arab-Israeli conflict and the way people talk about what's going on in Israel and their disagreement with some Israeli politics, compare it to the way we talk about Korea, North Korea. Right now, there's pretty universal agreement that we in our society do not like what the North Korean government is doing. It's not a lot of disagreement on that right now. I haven't seen any calls in New Zealand to wipe North Korea off the map. Actually, I haven't seen any calls anywhere in the world to wipe North Korea off the map. There's a lot of discussion about people having difficulties, having disagreements with what North Korea is doing politically. But no one has mentioned the possibility of wiping North Korea off the map. Similarly, no one has mentioned the possibility of rounding up and exterminating the Jews of New Zealand, the North Koreans of New Zealand. Okay? We haven't had rallies in the street shouting, kill the North Koreans of New Zealand. This kind of thing doesn't happen. Everyone is talking about the leader of North Korea has an oppressive regime that is doing some very dangerously scary saber-rattling with nuclear weapons and missiles.
And then they turn around and want to go skiing.
That's another issue. The thing is that the things that the North people are talking about, the issues with North Korea, this is good. Mm-hmm. We have issues to talk about. We have disagreements about the way that we go about doing that. I think the New Zealand government wants to take a much more diplomatic approach. The American government wants to take a much more
aggressive,
confrontational approach. Okay, and we can debate the reasons, the pros and cons of either one. Mm-hmm. Okay. The point is that we're talking about the issues. When the discussion goes to Israel, there is an active discussion all over the world about whether Israel should be wiped off the map because we don't like some of the policies that the current government has. Really? So, again, helping people good, hurting people bad. If you're choosing to use your disagreement with the policy as a reason why you can hurt them, you're wrong. Okay? So yes, by all means, disagree with the policies of Israel. By all means, talk about why you disagree, what your issues are. But if you allow that to change, if you allow that to digress into why you have a right to destroy Israel, then you are the problem. Similarly, we've had marches in Queen Street calling for death to the Jews, with people shouting death to the Jews. And I've had members of Parliament tell me that they would be happy to see the Jews of New Zealand rounded up and shot because of their views on Israeli policy. Really? Rounding up the Jews of New Zealand and shooting them? We've had, on multiple occasions, we've had these discussions. It's a regular, I mean, anybody who looks at social media will find daily examples of people calling for harm to the Jews of New Zealand, physical harm, because they disagree with the politics of the current government in Israel. And you see where this is going, where it's no longer about the issue. It's about your justification to want to use force.
To be anti-Semitic.
Actually, no, it's not really about being anti-Semitic at this point. It's about wanting to lash out and hurt people. So, have you ever gotten angry, Joan?
Oh, yes.
Have you ever wanted to reach out and hit somebody? Have you ever had that thought in the back of your mind somewhere?
Not physical hit, tongue hit.
Yeah. You don't usually do that. Usually you feel there's something in you that says that's the wrong thing to do. And you think about that. So what you have to understand is that as animals, as biological creatures, we have a baser instinct that wants to use force to hurt others for some reason. I can go into the biology behind
unless
that.
Unless you're a short, small person, it's not very strong.
Okay, you happen to be a short, small person, Joan, in physical stature, but in intellectual and emotional stature, you're not. Okay?
So one chooses different weapons.
One chooses different weapons, but the fact that you're choosing weapons to hurt is the issue. Mm. And we all have this guttural instinct, this baser animal instinct that wants to reach out and hurt others, whether it's you're talking about a vestigial version of a pecking order or a tribal pecking order or whatever it is, wherever it comes from, it's something inside of us. And as a society, we realize that actually, no, that's not an acceptable way to live.
That's the anger you feel if you see a woman beating a child in a supermarket.
For you, that may be what inspires it. Mm-hmm. For others, it may be other things. The reality is that people have this baser instinct. And ISIS was very effective at encouraging people to indulge that baser instinct to get recruits from middle-class white Europeans to come and join them, because these people work in offices and they've got these very repressed lives, and they feel that they want to let loose and they want to let loose and hurt somebody, and they're told they're not allowed to, and here's the group telling them that they are allowed to. Okay? And so if you took away anti-Semitism, people would use their desire to hurt against somebody else, whether it's going after women, going after gays, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. People are going to go after somebody.
Yeah.
The point is, if you're using your reasons for a disagreement, your discussion and disagreement as a reason to hurt, you are now the problem. If you're discussing the issues, you may be part of the solution. You may just be off base, but you're not part of the problem. And so one of the things that I've done, because I'm involved in a lot of civil rights groups and things like that, and a lot of those people have become very anti-Israel. And one of the things that I do is I ask my friends, what have you done to help Palestinians that does not involve hurting Israel and Jews? And they become dumbfounded. So I tell them, okay, I donate money to a legal fund that provides legal aid to Palestinians who feel they've been discriminated against by the Palestinian government. What do you do? As a Jew, I donate money to a medical fund that provides medical and food aid to Palestinians who are caught up in the conflict. What do you do? And what a lot of my friends have realized is that actually their whole focus had gone away from helping Palestinians and had become, how can we hurt Jews? And what I've tried to do is change that to by focusing on very simple, helping people good, hurting people bad. When you work to help people, to build a better life for people, it doesn't matter if they're the people I like or the people I don't like. You're actually part of the solution.
Can
and you- when you work to hurt people, and work against people, it doesn't matter whether I like the people or I dislike the people, you are now the problem. So your question.
I was just trying to bring it back to politics and say Parliament, where even though some one side might propose something good, the other side feels that they must run it down. They must say it's not good. They must not support it. Because
you're getting into identity politics there. I'd rather take it back to something very personal. I think for me, the real meaning of philosophy, going back to where we started from, is about what you do personally in your life. And whether abstracting these ideas out to what somebody else does is actually a great way of relinquishing your personal responsibility for what you do in your life. Actually, in your life, helping people good, hurting people bad. When you are helping people to build a better life, they may be my enemies, they may be my friends. You're part of the solution. You're building a better world. When you are working against people to hurt people, they may be my enemies, they may be my friends. Doesn't matter. You are now the problem.
I think we will take Lenny to Parliament, get him to give a lecture to each side, saying, be nice to each other.
I didn't say be nice to each other. We actually, I mean, there's actually a legitimate reason for a meaningful and robust debate in Parliament. There's a very good reason why one side has the role of providing the opposition view and presenting trying to find the flaws in various policies. Okay, so because as long as you're dealing with the issues and you're debating the issues, that's fine. But when you're using it as a justification for why you should be able to hurt the other side, that's when it goes too far.
Thanks, Lenny. Thank you for those wise words. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to listen next Sunday at 10 past 10. And if you've missed this program, you can go to www.planetaudio.org.nz/Radio Shalom. And we want to thank our sponsor, Nature Bee.